Good morning, Teachers on Fire. Welcome back to another edition of the Teachers on Fire podcast, my opportunity to chat live and in real time with different teachers on fire around the world. This podcast is intended to warm your heart, spark your thinking, and ignite your professional practice. Today's Teacher on Fire is Lynette Earle. Lynette is a high school teacher of 15 plus years. She is currently teaching Career Life Education and the Family Studies ADST trio of courses, as well as her own developed course, Intro to Careers in Teaching 12. On top of being a teacher, she is also her school's assessment lead. She is passionate about all things assessment and is an active member of the Empowerment Ecosystem and Facebook group Beyond Report Cards. You can follow Lynette on X at @ms_Lynette_edu. Lynette, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to light it up?
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Awesome. Well, Lynette, why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your current context in education? What does that look like?
Well, first off, I am from the unceded territory of the Chicoic, Puyallup, and Tsleil-Waututh in Chilliwack, BC. I currently teach high school. All the classes that you did just say, I've been doing that for, I'm full-time teacher on top of the assessment lead. And yeah, working with students is definitely probably my passion, as much as I love assessments and I want to help teachers. I'm balancing both, and it's been it's a fun balancing act. It's definitely been better this year than it was last year. So
I am glad to hear that. Whenever I hear that things have gotten a little better from the COVID times was a difficult experience for all of us. But when I hear that teachers are starting to find their groove and the sustainability, that is always good news. Well, hopefully I didn't steal any thunder, because my next question, Lynette, is all about that low moment or an experience of adversity, something that you faced in your teaching or education journey. So can you tell us about some challenge and how you worked your way through it?
Yeah, I think right after COVID, when we came back after lockdown and my school went into octets.
Oh, yeah.
That made it quite interesting. So at one point I had a prep for an entire 21 days straight all day long. And in that time, we had had a Zoom Pro D day with Tom Shimmer. Okay. And that brought a lot of angst in my school. He did not come across positively. I'm going to blame Zoom on it.
Sure.
But that amount of time of prep actually gave me a lot of time to start looking into assessment and seeing what I was doing and where everything was. And then I realized I'm by myself. Nobody teaches my courses. At that time, I was teaching Spanish, and I definitely felt very much alone. And navigating the new ways of looking at assessment and even navigating how my own curriculum actually worked, because we didn't get any training on it. I ended up having to seek help and a community outside of my own school district. That's how I got connected with Beyond Report Cards group. And then from there, everything just started snowballing, but snowballing into, honestly, a really nice snowman. Mm-hmm. So not a bad snowball. But it was hard being by myself and not having anybody to really talk to and discuss, because the views that I was developing were not similar to those that I worked with.
You mentioned some great people, and let's jump right into Beyond Report Cards and the Empowerment Ecosystem, because I'm very familiar with Shannon Schinkel and Natalie Vardabasso. There we go. Yeah. So tell us more about those groups, and just in general, what have you been thinking about in the assessment space lately?
Shannon's been great. That I'm so thankful for her putting together that group. That's probably been my life-saving for mindset and everything. And then actually, that's how I met Natalie, was through Beyond Report Cards. She had put a post about looking for people who wanted to innovate assessment and see where that goes. And I'm like, yeah, I'm interested. And so she interviewed me, and then I ended up joining the ecosystem. I was part of the original, I don't know how many we were, 15 or so, 20 of her beta group. to like test the whole system and how it all works and go through all the learning with her. And through that, I met Tom Shimmer, I've met Katie White, amongst a ton of other people that are across the continent. That's also kind of my other saving grace. Like, now that's a regular thing. We have coaching calls. So every month we meet up online during different times and get to talk with other teachers or other leaders in their school districts and discuss where we are in assessment, different things that we're struggling with. So we get feedback, like, what do you think about this? Will this work? Do you have any other ideas? It's been really good.
Awesome. And is there a particular idea or concept or practice that you've been really wrestling with, engaging with, sinking your teeth into lately?
I think for me, the newest thing that I'm really trying is actually trying to amplify student voice. But working actually with my staff, now that they're more open to, they had kind of a positive push of, okay, let's dive into the curriculum and see what we can do with assessment. So we had a couple of meetings with a professor from UFV, Cheryl McMath. She's also part of Kaflan. And that was probably the biggest push with my staff. They're like, okay, we've got this new reporting order. What does this even mean? How do we make those learning standards that we actually have to assess into a proficiency scale? So trying to get people to understand that, and actually me really looking into their curriculums as well, because like, I know mine very well, but other subjects I'm not as familiar with. So that's been a little bit of a struggle. Like, okay, I'm not exactly sure how that would progress, but let's take a look at it and work on it together. And that's been pretty good. Time is probably the biggest issue.
Right, right.
We just don't have enough time.
So for the podcast listeners who are coming to us from all over the world, we are teaching and educating in British Columbia, a province in the country of Canada, and we're working with this proficiency scale through kindergarten through ninth grade, and it is based on this these four levels of proficiency: emerging, developing, proficient, and extending. And it is fascinating. It's transformed our practice over the last 5 years, and now it's been mandated across every school in the province. Something I've been thinking a lot about, Lynette, and maybe we'll get into it as we talk about ADST here in a minute, but I've been wrestling still with this idea of extending. I think there is still, it's still such a murky area for so many educators, and I think there are different ideas floating around about what that should look like. So maybe I won't spoil it. Maybe we'll come back to it in ADST in a moment. I also wanted to talk to you, Lynette, about this whole area of UDL. Now, this is an area, Universal Design for Learning, is something that I and my colleagues are trying to learn more about. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to Katie Novak and others talk about it. I feel like I still have a lot to learn. Can you share an example of how UDL is shaping your teaching practice this year?
Yeah. So I actually only recently learned about it as well. We had a Pro D Day with a guest speak, a keynote. We had Jennifer Katz.
Okay.
And she talked about it and showed like a triangle of like assignments or tasks that students could do based on the different learning standards and how it gives students choice and stuff. And that was kind of my first introduction to it. I think the biggest thing that I really focus on in my class at this point, just because there's so many things that are being not necessarily thrown at us, but put in front of teachers right now to improve their practice, assessment, the new curriculum, Indigenous education, UDL. So I am new to it, but I think in the new reporting order, there's actually a section about just universal learning adaptions or things that you could do with your students. I took a look at that list. I'm like, all right, well, all of these things are things that I'm already doing. And so I've really focused on, okay, if I do have students with IEPs, I will look, all right, who's my list? And before I even read the IEP, I connect with the student. I'm like, what do you need? What is not making sense? I actually recently made a post about that just because one of my other classes is working on their project. Actually, they leaned into IEPs. And so, like, kids aren't documents. And so we do need to get to know them. Like, can't really make we can see a list of adaptations that a document tells us, but maybe that doesn't work for the class at hand. Most of the things that are on an IEP are about math. I don't teach math. So I'm like, okay, how does this work in my context? And really just working with those students, the biggest thing for me when I think of UDL is, what does that kid need? If that kid needs it, I bet other kids would benefit from this as well. And so for me, again, the biggest thing is student choice. I never give really one thing. So if they're going to write what I call an empathy report in my class, they can show their learning in a number of ways. They get to choose whatever is best for them. Yes, the majority end up picking essay format, but I have some kids like, no, I'm not a good writer. I'm much better verbally, and I would prefer to create like a PowerPoint to guide my speaking, and I'll actually talk to you. And so we schedule a time to talk.
And on that point, just picking right up from that example, it really depends, I find, on the learning target. So yes. Some teachers out there I know will cry foul when you said, oh, you're letting this student not write or maybe express themselves in audio or video or some other form or some other medium. But hold on. Wait a minute, maybe the learning target isn't actually measuring the proficiency of writing.
Right.
Maybe the learning target is focused on some analysis of ideas or some comprehension yes. of plot structure or character development or some other angle. Maybe we don't need to have them write. Let's really think through carefully what we are trying to measure, what we are trying to teach, what students should be learning. And that's why I think learning targets are so critical. Yeah. Do we know what we are aiming for? Because I think, again, some teachers are going to be very worried that we're lowering standards, but we're not. We're not. No. We're actually being very clear about what it is that we are trying to accomplish with students or what we're trying to help them move into. Before we move on, I just want to put up Lynette's tweet on the screen, and let's see if I can do this well. It's always a little bit tricky, but she said it, you said it so well, and I mentioned it a moment ago on my other broadcast, but she says, funny how when you take time to get to know students and talk to them about their needs, the IEP is just extra validating info. So I just thought that was so well said, Lynette, that we can go to the IEP for the scouting report, right? We can go for all this extra information. We can read their psych profile. We can read about their, you know, all of their history and so on. But there's nothing like just getting to know your learners. And hopefully for most of us at this point in the school year, we are getting there. Well, another passion of mine, Lynette, is ADST. And for those not in British Columbia, ADST is Applied Design Skills and Technologies. It looks different, very different, at different grade levels, in different modules, in different forms, but it always incorporates design thinking.
Yes.
And to me, that is so exciting. We're helping students work through the design process, from empathizing with users to, let's see if I can remember them all, ideating, prototyping, collecting feedback, testing, iterating, and finally sharing their ideas or their products. It's so valuable. It's so rich. It should be applied in every subject. So I'd love to hear, I operate in a 5, 6, 7 kind of a world. What does ADST look like in the higher grades for you?
Okay, so for me, my ADST classes are all of the like family studies trio. So that's family and society 10, interpersonal and family relationships 11, child development and caregiving 12. And then the course that I developed, Intro to Careers and Teaching 12, I also used those same ADST design thinking competencies for that course as well, because I loved them so much and I could see what students could do with them. And so, they go through, I kind of focus on 5 of the competencies, which are empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and share. I find the testing of and feedback is throughout every single phase, no matter what. And so I look at that a little, I don't necessarily mark that one explicitly, but the kids go through it and they find it really hard at first because they're really struggling with the fact that their whole learning process has been so linear that when they're given a system like design thinking, you can't go in a linear fashion. So you might be empathizing for a bit and then you start seeing problems. And so you start defining problems and like, oh, I've got some ideas for solutions. And so it's a lot of back and forth. And then they'll be looking at a problem and they're like, yeah, but I don't quite understand this. And I'm like, well, maybe you need to go back to empathize and research a little bit more and find out about your users. And so they're going, learning with that. And I find by the second unit, they're pretty good. And they're much more willing to like, I need to go collect more data. I'm going to do another survey. I need to talk to this group of people because I didn't focus my questions properly and I didn't dig deep enough. So the cool thing is just the ideas these kids come up with. They are amazing. I found my students, their just whole concept of empathy in general changes. They start seeing people, like even just their peers in the hallways, they see them differently now because of the topics that we're talking about, especially because they are about family and relationships and teaching for the one course. So they just start seeing things in a whole different light that really makes them think differently. I've actually had students who are like, yeah, I think differently in this class. And then when I go to another class, I have to rearrange how my brain works.
Well, that's unfortunate. That's a loss, I think. I want to, again, for the podcast listeners, I'll do my best to interpret what I'm putting up on the screen here. But this is from Langley School District. It's an articulation of the human-centered design thinking. And again, for anyone watching or viewing, I think, I mean, whether it's in the kitchen, whether it's in the computer lab, whether it's coding, programming, robotics, or entrepreneurship is a great piece of ADST as well. Our grade six and seven students right now are putting together their entrepreneurship projects, and they're finally going to market this Friday. But this process is so powerful. So again, like you were just saying, we talk to kids about, hey, what are your users looking for? Is there demand? Is there a need for this product? Right? You might have a creative idea, but is it lining up with user needs and demands? So I could talk about ADST all day. What's been your favorite piece of ADST lately? Is there one learning activity or project that has been a lot of fun for you?
They're all so different because none of my projects, so I set it up in a way that I do some direct teaching at the beginning, especially based off of my content of the course. And then from there, I'm like, okay, let's develop. We go through QFT, which is the question formulation technique. And so we go through that once they have enough information and they start formulating their own essential questions. And from that, they dive into their own research. So me not telling them, you need to look this up. You need to understand what this is. And I kind of let them, based off of their initial base content understanding, let them dive into their own research and allow them to go down whatever rabbit hole they end up. So for instance, I know that my child development class, their current unit is pregnancy and childbirth. And through their research, they ended up coming up with a question that was actually based off of current societal norms on sexuality and ended up uncovering things of like, we don't have a proper sex ed program in our schools that are developed and age appropriate for all levels, that everyone's getting more or less the same understandings. They've done enough research to figure out that like sexual abuse and teen pregnancies are actually higher in places that don't have that education. So I didn't teach that. They found that on their own. And then they're prototyping like, let's try to make a program that teachers could actually use in their classrooms. They figure that out themselves. I don't dictate where their project goes. They get to design that themselves entirely. I think the best part of is hearing them share out their ideas with each other and then hearing all of the students giving each other feedback. Yeah, that's a great idea. Have you thought about this? Where do you think this is going to happen? Like, have you looked into a location and all sorts of different things? So I think, honestly, the whole process, the whole class ends up talking together, even though they're all working on their own different projects. So
Such powerful learning. I mean, I love it so, so much. I mean, listen to Lynette describe students doing their own primary research, right? This is not Googling something. This is going out into their own building, their own community, finding out about the needs of others, and then the peer feedback. I mean, it's those lively conversations that are going to help them continue to iterate and improve their prototype. I cannot wait for my entrepreneurship fair, the one that I mentioned coming up this Friday, and it sounds like you've got a lot
of great stuff. Our school has one as well on Thursday. Yeah.
There we go. I'm sure it's happening around the province.
Yeah.
Well, moving on, Lynette, what else is setting you on fire in education right now?
So many things. I think my biggest thing right now is I've been super excited about the course that I actually developed. So Intro to Careers in Teaching 12. It's my baby now. So really enjoying that. There's about 16 kids in the class. So it's a nice small size. Most of our classes are not usually that small, but when we have new courses starting up, we have a little bit of leniency on, okay, we know they're going to start small until they build up and people know about them. Right. So that course has been really cool. One, it is allowing students to look at education from a different lens. So they're so used to being the student in the desk and this is how you learn. Now they're learning, okay, what are different teaching styles? They're different ways of learning, even just all the background stuff that teachers have to do. They're like, I didn't realize that teachers had all this other stuff in the background of what we do. We have rules and regulations, codes of ethics, professional standards, and then just all the other layers that just happen in a district of, okay, like we're required to take attendance. It's not actually something that we just think we have to do. I don't know. There's lots of things that they didn't realize that, oh, there's actually a lot more to teaching than just being a teacher in front of a group of students.
Right.
So I think that's been eye-opening for them. They didn't understand what IEPs were, other than a couple that had them themselves. But they're like, what does one even look like? They hadn't seen one. So now they have seen one and see, and they're like, oh, they're like, a lot of these are deficit based. I'm like, yeah. They're like, that needs to change. So when I see students saying stuff like that,
right,
it's been pretty cool just because, not that I purposely did this when I created the course using design thinking, like they actually have to find uncovered problems within whatever their content is. And of course the content is literally the entire K-12 education system and everything that goes into it. And one student made a comment of, I keep reading in my research that they've uncovered like all these problems that exist and they're talking about how to solve them. They're like, why haven't they solved them yet?
Love like, that we're optimism.
Working on it. Yeah. We're working on it.
Awesome. So, Lynette, how are you learning to grow professionally and improve your practice this year? Now, someone caught me with this question a week or two ago, not on a podcast, and I had to say, wow, I've got about three or four that are sort of poorly defined. So I'll be transparent and say, I don't know that I have a really clear single driving goal this year myself, but is there one in your case?
Yeah, I would say I think my biggest growth professionally right now is my podcast. And I thank Natalie Vardabesso for that one through the ecosystem.
Okay.
That was one of her things that she said was we need to tell our story and we need to actually talk, put our learning out public.
Mm.
So, which is actually what you do in design thinking with students as well, is getting them to share about their learning. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this is great for my students. I think I should probably start doing it myself. So nice. That's actually how I ended up getting more active on X. So was just putting myself out there. This is what I'm learning. This is what I'm noticing. And then I'm like, I would like to do a podcast. That was like her, okay, here's the bigger thing that you could do. Let's go start up a podcast. I'm like, okay. So I thought about that for quite a few months before I decided, okay, yes, I'm going to do it. Now, what am I going to do it on? And she kind of helped me through that just based off of conversations. And She's like, amplifying student voice. This is what you keep talking about over and over and over again. So I'm like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. And so that's where the podcast, how it ended up developing. And I came up with Lit Education. I hear students always in the hallways being like, oh, that's so lit. I'm like, what does lit mean? So I'm like, all right, I'm going to turn this. And the kids loved it. They love how, like, in the end, they're like, all right, let's get Lit Education style. They, I don't know. So part of it is definitely my students have helped with that. But that's probably been my biggest area of growth. I'm learning so many things doing the podcast with, like, the tech side of it, organizing all the students and getting interviews done. Where do I do the interviews? Because schools are loud. So I found spaces in the building that end up working. So it's been good. It's also added another layer of extra work for me, but I've made it work and it's been good. So I'm really enjoying that.
I so enjoyed listening to an episode from the Lit Education podcast this week, Lynette. And I just want to offer an encouragement because I'm thinking about the time of year when other educators, teachers around the world are tuning in and maybe they're thinking about doing something similar to you. I think off air talking to you, you've been keeping it pretty simple so far. And I know this is possible. So besides your phone and the, I think you're using the Spotify platform, Spotify for Podcasters platform. Can you give that encouragement to a teacher out there thinking about, hey, can I collect some voices from my community that we can share the learning around the world?
Yeah, it's super easy, especially if you do have a phone. I mean, everything's built in right there. We see our students using them every day. And I'm just like, well, I've had to help. I've had to ask for help. So my students do help me a little bit. And so, yeah, it's super easy. It did take a little bit of, I've also even learned that you can use your voice memo section of your phones. And so I pre-record my interviews with students and then I can transfer those into Podcasters. Mm-hmm. And it already has music that you can pick from for, like, your intros and exits. I could have spent hours probably looking for one. Like, I don't have that time. I'm also a mom of 3 children, ages 6, 8, and 10. So it's a juggling act. So I'm like, everything's right here. It's so simple. It's a little bit hard to edit out things if you don't want it to be there. So I've had to re-record stuff. I haven't figured that part out. But I'm like, you know what? Let's just go. Phrase I always have is sometimes you just have to start before you're ready. Like, if you don't, when are you going to start? So
as one of my heroes says, you've got to just hit record. You've got to just hit record. And that's how, I mean, I've written about this in the past, but this podcast began very humbly. It was a massive disaster. My first episode, my first interview ended up in 6 different pieces. Oh, long story. But you know what? You got to get going somewhere and you just improve. You take these tiny incremental steps of growth. So I applaud you, Lynette. Let's keep it going. And if you are thinking about a podcast for your education community in 2024, you've got 2 educators here who have tried it and are encouraging you to give it a shot. We're starting to move into some quicker questions, Lynette. Can you share about a phone app, a personal habit, or maybe a productivity hack of some kind that contributes to your success?
Yeah. I started bullet journaling.
Okay.
So I don't really use apps too much. I'm very hands-on. I can't remember things if I don't write them down. So I started bullet journaling, I think, when my second kid was born. So maybe 8 years ago. And that has been probably my biggest thing. I have a journal and pen with me everywhere I go. so that's probably my thing. And just, I actually purposefully scheduled my kids to be at dance for 2 hours so that I could have 2 hours to myself. So that has been excellent. I sometimes go and read. I usually have a book with me. I have my journal with me. Sometimes I meet with other teachers and I help them out. It's just kind of been my time that I get to dictate, and it's been really good.
Lynette, I haven't given you enough credit, by the way. I was thinking in my community, how many full-time teachers are actually actively parents as well? And that list has gotten so short. I'm sure it's the same in your community too. It's just really, really tough to be a full-time teacher and parent. So my hat goes off to you. I think more and more teachers like you are making the move to part-time or leaving the profession entirely. So it's challenging, but I think Lynette just dropped a wisdom bomb there. If you didn't catch it the first time, schedule some time for yourself, and it may come in the form of hobbies or passions for your children. Cami is on LinkedIn and she says, yes, and super easy to edit out the rough spots with the Spotify podcast tool. So I haven't dug deep there because I do my editing elsewhere, but that is good to know, Cami. Thanks for letting us know that. Hey, when you leave the school building, Lynette, what is it that brings you alive and helps you keep your fire burning bright?
Oh, well, last year, just because my kids were at dance, I'm like, you know what? My dance studio offers dance classes for adults, for like the mums and dads of the kids. I'm like, all right, I'm going to try this. I haven't danced since I was probably 7 years old. And that has been amazing. We actually compete. We go on stage and
oh, wow.
just the adrenaline coming from like going out on stage. It's so much fun. And at class, we laugh and we're getting some exercise and we're all coming from the same kind of like we're all working. We all have kids. It's hard to juggle everything. So it's just a really good community. And right now my hip hop class is actually the teacher is a student that I taught probably 13 years ago. So it's really cool having that come full circle and having one of my students now be my own teacher. And she's amazing.
That is wild. That's super, super fun. You know what? A part of me wants to join you in that. I mean, not literally join you. It would be with my wife probably. But a part of me is like, you know, hip hop, I could get into that. Salsa, I don't know. I've tried. I don't know if my body works some of those ways, but maybe I need some more growth mindset on that. Well, Lynette, as we wrap up, we're headed into the lightning round. Are you ready for that? Okay, so I'm going to drop some quick questions on you. We're looking for quick responses, if you can. Yep. And we're also hoping you can keep it to one or two. I know for some of these, we want to drop 20 names or titles, but do your best to keep this list short. So starting at Education X, who is one person that we need to follow there?
Can I say two?
Sure.
Okay. Melissa Dean. I think she goes by Dean of Math.
Dean of Math, yeah.
Love her. Love everything that she says about assessment. Love what she's doing, even with design thinking in the math classroom, which is amazing. And Leanne Jung.
Okay.
With inclusion. Like, she's got daily posts of what you should be doing with students and seeing how students should be actually displayed in our classrooms. Like, they're part of the system. So why are we not lifting them up? So those two people.
So good. Point us to an ed tech tool or app that you currently love using somewhere in your classroom or professional practice.
Canva. Canva has been life-saving.
Yes. Oh, 100%. One book, Lynette, one that you've been reading lately, or maybe one of your all-time faves.
Going with an all-time fave is Trevor McKenzie's Inquiry Assessment Edition. That is probably the book that lit my fire of at least the inquiry side of things. So I already had assessment going with Tom Shimmer and his book, but then Trevor McKenzie's, I'm like, okay, now I can, it made it a little bit easier to combine the two, assessment and teaching, and loved it.
Great name and title. Are you a podcast listener? Now, you are now a podcast creator, so I have to assume you probably listen to some podcasts. Is there one near the top of your list that you can share?
There's a bunch, but most recently is actually, I've really been enjoying Shannon's Get Messy, the Messy, oh shoot.
Embrace the Messiness?
Embrace the Messy. Yeah. Yes. Embrace the Messy with Shannon Schinkel. Like, once she got, I was like, oh my God, Shannon's starting one too. This is awesome. And then all the people that she's been interviewing are like all of my like, oh my God, I love them. Oh my God, I love them. So
rock stars.
It's been really good. Nice to hear their voices with other people as well, because I've now heard a lot of those people with many different podcasters. So just cool to just rehear their stories and see where they are today.
So good. Now, on that subject of podcasts, who do you think I need to interview on the Teachers on Fire podcast?
I'd probably say Melissa Dean, if you haven't yet.
Okay.
And another person that I've been working with in the ecosystem is Danelle Amirat. Danelle Amirez. She's from somewhere in the States. I can put her information out. Almarez, that's what it is. Sorry. Danelle Almarez. She's amazing.
Lynette, when you have some downtime and your brain is mush and you have nothing left for productivity, is there anything that you're streaming these days on any of the big streaming platforms? What are you watching for fun?
We don't have any of the streaming.
None of them.
Okay. None of them. So we actually decided to disconnect a couple years ago. We do, for a little bit, we had Netflix and then a little bit we had Disney, but only one at a time. And now we're actually using Canopy, which is through our public library system, which is free.
Okay.
So yeah, we try to disconnect a little bit more, just because we're constantly connected. So yeah.
Hey, can't argue with that. That's just good practice and good humanity right there. Lynette, this has been a lot of fun. It's been everything that I hoped it would be. What are the best ways for Teachers on Fire to follow you?
Probably X, on X with Miss Lynette underscore Edu or Instagram. That one's Lynette Ignited Edu. So yeah, those are probably the two ways to connect with me best. I'm on those regularly.
Yeah, you are. And thank you so much. It's been really fun. That's how we connected, I think, on X. Yeah. And it's been fun. I'm like, yay, another ADST fan here in BC. And not too far away. I live in Surrey. So it's good to know you're nearby. Thank you so much, Lynette. It means a lot to me when guests give up some of their personal time on the weekend to just talk about education, learning, assessment, UDL, all the good things we got into. And to you, the listener, thanks for joining us this morning or this week, whenever you are tuning in here on YouTube or on the podcast. I'm so grateful that you decided to spend some of your day listening. I hope that in some way the content you heard from Lynette Earle sparked your thinking and ignited your practice. And I'll meet you next week right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you next episode. Bye-bye. Even when you feel low, you can still go. Even when you feel slow, you can still go. Even when there's no hope, you can still go. I never answer to no, man, I still go. Go, go.